You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hello and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I am your host, Michael Kushner. I am so excited because this episode is 50! 50! Anyone know that Molly Shannon sketch from SNL? It's one of the best. I'm 50. Well, we're 50, and I have an incredible announcement. Dear Multi-Hyphenate is going to be a book. How to Be a Multi-Hyphenate in the Theater Business, Conversations, Advice, and Tips from Dear Multi-Hyphenate is going to be published by Routledge Publishing of the Taylor & Francis Group. As soon as I know more information, I will share it with you, but the easiest way to find out up-to-date information is by following at Dear Multi-Hyphenate on Instagram or going to the brand new website, DearMultiHyphenate.com. Thanks to J.S. Productions for making that incredible website. It really is unbelievable. But more information will be posted as I know about the book. All I know is that it's written. I took the entire month of July to finish it, and it's going. It's going to be on shelves, which is wild to say. I've always wanted to be an author, so I'm very excited. Anyway, let's keep the celebration going because I have one of my favorite artists as this episode's guest. I have Nina West, and I love Nina West so much. Andrew Levitt, aka Nina West, is with us. Nina West is an American drag queen, actor, and singer-songwriter based in Columbus, Ohio, played by Andrew Levitt. And is the most Googled drag queen in the world from 2020 to 2021 with over 7.8 billion unique searches. That is a wild way to open up a bio, and I love that. She rose to national prominence in 2019 with her appearance on VH1's Emmy-winning show RuPaul's Drag Race Season 11, where she played sixth and won Miss Congeniality. In 2021, she returned to the show and was anointed America's Sweetheart by RuPaul herself. She has EPs, which have made the Billboard list, and she has her own podcast, Nina's podcast, the Drag Cast with Nina West, which relaunched in 2020 with guests including Glenn Close, Patricia Clarkson, Daisy Ridley, Jared Harris, Titus Burgess, Kristen Chenoweth, Orfe, Casey Levy, Pentatonics, and more. I love Nina West, and what's very exciting is that Nina will be touring the U.S. as Edna in the upcoming Hairspray national tour. So get tickets, catch Nina doing the fabulous role of Edna, and laugh your socks off. Anyway, enjoy this episode. I love talking with Nina. Head to DearMultiHyphenate.com or follow at DearMultiHyphenate on Instagram, and let's get into the multi-hyphenation nation. I don't know. I just made that up. Workshop. Enjoy. And as always, we start with a fabulous quote on Dear Multi-Hyphenate. And today's quote is said none other by... Wait, is that English? It's said by none other. I'm okay. I swear. I'm just staring at the ocean. And like, I'm so distracted because my guest is so wonderful and amazing, and I'm completely starstruck because I'm obsessed with them. But today's quote is, you're about to see nudity. Don't worry, it's not me. And that is said none other by the fabulous Lady Bunny. And you're going to definitely hear nudity because I think we're going to get down to the nitty gritty and really get to some raw, awesome conversation. But
and the titty.
What'd you say?
And the titty. Yeah. And the titty.
Nitty gritty and the titty. Andrew Levitt, aka Nina West, how are you?
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Oh, just doing swimmingly, literally, because I was on, you know, in the beach. So literally doing swimmingly, I guess. I'm so honored that you're joining me on Dear Multi-Hyphenate. And I'm chatting from Fort Lauderdale. And where are you right now?
I am in the middle of Midtown Manhattan in Times Square at the beautiful Playbill offices.
Yeah, and you so how does it feel to be at the Playbill offices? I mean, it's, I know that you were a theater student and you grew up in Ohio, correct?
Yeah, it's I did. I grew up in Canton, Ohio, or like a small farming community called Greentown, which is just north of Canton. And I was a theater kid. I started doing theater when I was 16, because my parents didn't want me to do theater. This is a true story. My parents didn't want me to do theater, so I went and auditioned for a community theater production of A Christmas Carol once I got my driver's license. And because then, well, then I could drive myself to the rehearsals. Because I was like, I'm not going to drive you to rehearsals. I don't want you to be an actor. I wanted to be serious. And I was like, Mama, but I'm not.
Mama.
But Mama. But Mama, I'm not Mama. that's my best Liza.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Mama. It's not
my best.
Good.
My best Liza stems from Hot Georgia. It's that video.
Hot Georgia.
I started working with clay. That's my.
Oh, that's really good. That's really good.
Thank you very much. Now,
I thought I was talking to Liza. I was like, oh my God, I can be David Guest.
You know what? What's so wild about Liza is that my Aunt Lizzie, when you see – if you were to pass what you think is Liza in Hell's Kitchen, because my Aunt Lizzie lives in Hell's Kitchen, if you think – if you have to squint and say, is that Liza? It's not. It's my Aunt Lizzie. Same haircut, dressed in black, same eye makeup. I mean, like, genuinely, and she has a big framed Liza poster above her bed. Like, if you think that's Liza, it's actually my Aunt Lizzie, and give her a big hug for me.
Now I'm going to go over to 9th Avenue and just, or 10th, and just walk up and down between like 42nd and 53rd. I'm just going to be looking for her.
She's usually at the Amish market, which she calls the Amish market. So if you're there and you see her, she's probably paying with everything in coins, which is just, she does that. So back to you're starting the theater. Now it sounds like they didn't realize how big of a star you were, because if they really wanted you, they would have included transportation to and from. You wouldn't have had to turn in yourself. You could have played Tiny Tom. Not Tiny Tom. That's your Tiny.
It's Tiny Tim. Tim. It's Tim.
Okay. It's Tim, honey.
It's Tim, sweetie. It's Tim.
At the top of your resume.
She's the one who is the whole story's about. It's Tim. It's Tim. But yeah, I mean, like, that's, it's truly, like, it's not that they didn't want me to do it, but they were really doing actively discouraging it. I mean, like, they were just like, we're not going to make it easy for him. And so I got my license and I went and auditioned for a show. And so that one experience was like the opening. I don't know how old you are, but it was opened a lot of doors for me personally, because I knew I was different. I knew I was queer, and I knew that gay men were involved with theater locally. And so I knew that, like, that's how I could be around other queer people and meet other queer people. And if for nothing else, it was almost like a device with which I would use to cope. And I'd like begin to like, oh, I have this idea. I'm looking forward to the day that I can go audition for a show or just be a part of that, because I knew theater people. If I didn't meet any gay men, I knew I would meet people who were hopefully open-minded and willing to accept me for who I was. And so that was like the whole, I knew I was a creative person. I wanted to be involved with it, but it was also out of necessity for wanting to find other people like me, you know?
So,
yeah.
So, no, I love it. So that being said, I'm just wondering, like, so that was about 16 years old. And when did you start getting exposed to people like Joanne Worley, where you sort of started... which was amazing. But when did you start to sort of connect the camp and the gayness and the art all together?
I have a well-versed history of pop culture and language, a popular culture language. My grandparents loved different things, and I was immersed in, I think during the summers, I would spend a lot of time with my grandmother who lived locally. Mm-hmm. And then I would go for 2 weeks and live with my other grandmother and visit where they lived. So I was immersed in different types of popular culture. So my dad's mother and father loved Murder, She Wrote. And so I was very in love with Angela Lansbury at a very young age. You know, like I thought she was the best. I thought if I could be like Jessica Fletcher and solve crime and write mystery novels, I mean, that was like live in a small Maine town called Cabot Cove and try the lobster. I mean, but like my language was vast. I was exposed to a lot. Music was always playing in the house that I grew up in. Laughing was predominant and prevalent. Great sources, like my inspirations. If you watch my Drag Race interview and like when my entrance interview before we walked into the workroom, they said, who are your inspirations? I was like, Steve Martin and Miss Piggy. And like, you're like, I was like, I just grew up with a very diverse cultural language of music and film and television. My mom loves old movies. So like, I can remember watching, there's a Hitchcock film called Rebecca. And I would go into school and I would talk, and I was like, you know, in third grade, and I'd be talking about Rebecca and how the house, Mrs. Danvers is left in the house and it's burning down. I was just surrounded by drama, and I was like living it and allowing myself to be kind of feeling it, you know, like, and I don't think my parents knew that they were raising a gay child, but thankfully they allowed me in that, and all of these, this exposure, I was finding a language that, really helps to be able to speak in my career, right? When you watch Drag Race, RuPaul is so versed in popular culture and the language of popular culture. Has reference points, has, you know, there's lots of tactile points with which she brings into the show and challenges or in runway themes or in mini, right? You know, so, and like as gay men, you know, if you quote a Golden Girls episode, if you go into a gay bar and say, Miami is nice, but I'll say it twice, someone's going to be like, you're cuter than an inner uterine. You're going to hear that from somebody. You know, whether or not, you know, like it's just. So I don't know if I was falling into a pattern that we all as queer men can. I mean, but it is something that seems really predominant amongst queer men, it seems.
Your experience with coming in with the drama and being like, on this episode, that's mine with Titanic. My first grade teacher.
Oh my God, you just said Titanic. How old are you?
I was 7 when the movie came out, so I'm 30. But interview over.
Bye.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Yay!
Yay!
Adorable. Hi.
I feel you pinching my cheeks from across the way. Thanks, Grandma. So, my recent tattoo is I just got the last photo taken of the Titanic, on
my
arm.
Oh my God.
Because, watching the movie, I was so immersed in the drama, but growing up, I had discovered that I actually was on the Titanic in a past life. And I had this, like, wild, connection to the history. And, like, I had actually been, like, watching something that I had known from the eyes of a 7-year-old who was connected, because past lives, they stay with you pretty much until you're about 7 years old. That's when they're really fresh. And like, I was like watching and being like, I remember this. I'm so connected. But I didn't know yet that I had remembered it. But throughout my whole life, like John Jacob Astor, the richest man on the ship, is buried right outside of my apartment. And the first Playbill cover that I photographed was the Unsinkable Molly Brown revival. And I lived in London during the 100-year anniversary of the sinking. Was actually on a body of water during the time. Like, you know what I mean? And just like all of these things. And then I got a past life regression and confirmed that I've seen things through the eyes of Molly Brown. And then after research, like, I discovered that, like, John Jacob Astor and Molly Brown were actually really – they were tight, and which sort of explained why maybe John Jacob Astor is buried right outside of my apartment and has been since I moved to the city. And every April 15th, I actually go and sit by his grave.
Wait, hold on. Does he – so if – have you moved – so if you were to move, does he move? I'm just kidding.
You know, it's sort of like –
hold on. Mike is moving. Pack it up.
It's sort of like the lesbian, like, you know, 6-month anniversary for lesbians. Like, they get the U-Haul, so does John Jacob Astor.
This is – I'm, like, fascinated. Wait, can I ask a question?
Please do.
In your past – so do you – what do you know about your past life on the ship.
Molly Brown. I in the regression session, I was seeing things happen through Molly Brown's eyes. Like, she asked me to look in a mirror, and I saw her reflection, and I was also historically correct with things that I was saying that I didn't know, because when you do a past life regression session, you're not hypnotized. You're actually very aware. I was very aware of everything, but she basically, Myra of Soul Signs Hypnosis, hey girl, she was super adorable and super, like, accessible. Like, she was amazing to work with. So if anyone listening is like, past life regression session, like, this is an unpaid ad. Soul Signs Hypnosis in LA, we did it virtually, and she guided me through these things. And
writing it down right now.
Yeah, please do. And she guided me through these events, and I was saying these things. Like, she was like, okay, who's in the lifeboat with you? And I said, okay, there are two men, the rest are women, and there's one child to my left. And that was historically accurate, and I didn't know that. And then she was like, okay, now that you're on the Carpathia, like, what are you experiencing now? And I said, I'm given a job. I don't know why, but I feel like I'm given a job. And then when I researched, I found out, and these are things I didn't know, when I researched, I found out that she was appointed by all the survivors to be the head of the survivors committee in regards to the White Star Line and the investigations and stuff. And she still wasn't allowed to testify because she was a woman, and which was wild. But she also wound up becoming an actor, which I'm an actor as well. And she's a Cancer. She's born on July 16th and I'm July 10th. And there are so many similarities. And here's the crazy one. At the end of the session, my head started throbbing, and I never get headaches. And the last time I had a headache was when I had COVID, and that was the first symptom. And I fully just was – my head was splitting, and it was actually a little distracting. And then I, like, researching her, I read that she had died of a brain tumor.
But do you have a tumor?
I don't. I just had, like, I was just like, it was like, thank God, knock on wood. It was just like, I think what it was probably sympathy pains, or just like this, like, keying into the universe and, like, residual energy and, like, sensing the connections that were, like, physical and metaphysical and just like.
Did you ever see the musical Titanic, the musical?
Of course. I saw the national tour when I was seven. And friends on that tour have become friends now. Jen Waldman, who was on who was on the show. Like, yeah, 100%.
I saw it on Broadway, and I loved that show.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I loved that show. And yeah. I think there's something, Matt, I think we do get swept up in, like, these really beautiful, larger-than-life kind of moments, right? The Titanic is, like, this epic moment that is, like, so sad and tragic and I mean, yeah, sorry, I don't know what I'm doing other than...
Well, I think it's a lesson, I think it's a lesson in humility and failure, mm-hmm. because, like, you know, they were like, the ship can't sink, and then the universe was like, oh, try me, and you know what I mean? But what did people learn from... you know, what did people learn from that? So I do want to know, I'm going to jot this down for us to circle back to, but a multi-hyphenate, what I like to say, is an artist who has multiple proficiencies mm-hmm. that cross-pollinate to help flourish professional capabilities. Yeah. And you have quite a few different aspects in your artistry, and I want to ask you what your hyphens are. Mine are actor, photographer, producer, writer, podcaster. So what are your hyphens?
Oh gosh. Drag queen, actor, writer, producer, podcaster. God. self-made everyman. Brother, son,
I love uncle, that
person.
It's always so interesting to me when people include their, like, family relations and responsibilities in their hyphens, because
it really informed me. You know, I don't have the best my relationship with my blood family is always ongoing and not great all the time. You know, and It has informed every step of my career. Not necessarily wanting to buck the system, but wanting to prove to myself and to them that this was a viable thing. My dream was worthy and valuable. And they needed to be coaxed along a little bit. They needed to be held. They needed to be guided a little bit. I can't fault them for that, you know? But my multi-hyphenate is almost always in regard to the evolution and the belief that I am capable of more than just. Does that make sense?
It makes complete and total sense, because I think as family members, especially as artists, we have a responsibility for our audience, right? But mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, especially as queer artists, we have a responsibility to those that are closest to us, and that's our mm-hmm. family. And I think you're talking to you, I'm seeing it for the first time, because I never really understood why people would go, I'm an actor, photographer, producer, writer, podcaster, uncle, sister, you know, niece, like, I never understood that. But talking to you, I'm now understanding we have a responsibility to act as those roles. They're not just titles, but they have power behind them.
Yeah, and yes. I mean, like, and passion, work and passion and life goal, life drive, life work, like your own life's work looks like many different things at any given point. So I am lucky enough to sit in a place of where I do what I love every single day. It is difficult at times, and it is work, right? It's challenging, but it's how lucky am I that I get to do this? And a lot of that has been fueled by, I think, an initial belief that I was capable and that I deserved it. And that comes from someplace, right? I mean, my chosen family, I think, has done more to support me and allow me to understand that. But I've been able to provide that, live by example and show my blood family that has value. And that has worked. And that has allowed, again, an evolution allows me to be more multi-hyphenated. You know, so I think that's powerful.
I think that's super powerful. And it sort of connects to my next question, which, you know, how do you think that drag has helped you unpack and support your other hyphens, and also vice versa?
You know? I think drag requires you to be multifaceted, and it requires you to learn new skills, and it requires you to challenge yourself, and all of those things, I think, should you want to be successful in this industry, you have to be able to adapt. And again, I keep saying evolve, but drag, most queens I know in some way or another are kings or burlesque performers, are all self-made in a lot of ways, right? Because you're getting to define yourself in your art mm-hmm. in a very personal way. Mm-hmm. And an evolution comes with that, not mm-hmm. only in like putting it down on paper, but putting it on your skin. And also, how do you bring all of that to life? It requires skills and requires being multifaceted or multi-hyphenated. So you have to be able to understand that, like any artist, your definition is not permanent, but it's definitely you have to plant roots to be able to grow. So the definition has to start somewhere, but that always can evolve and change. I keep saying evolution. I didn't realize that I'd be talking about that so much, but I think it's really pertinent to the conversation.
That's interesting. You know, you talk about evolution, which, you know, goes back to science, and I just want to know, like, do you think, like, there is a science to multi-hyphenating? You know, you're talking about evolution, but I think, like, what is the psychology of that? Like, do you have any thoughts on that?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Great.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, my mind is going in. I've went in five different places almost immediately. Am I trying to prove to myself that I am capable of doing it? Am I trying to prove to the world that I'm worthy? I'm asking those questions, and I don't know that answer. You know, you're multi-hyphenate. Do you? I'm wondering if it's on some level, did I, in my own definition of myself, did I take too much personally about how the outside world saw me as a gay man? You know, and did I was like trying to prove to the world that I can do this, I can be successful at this, and I also can have like the life that I want to live and be happy in my definition of what happiness is? And I think there is some of that. I do think psychologically probably there is definitely probably some of that. I didn't want to fail myself and in turn allow people to say, see, I told you so.
I did that because I realized, like, when I edit so many of these episodes, I'm like, there's silence there, but I know that I'm nodding my head in agreement, and I wish that I had said yeah. And I just did it, and it just came out so weird.
I felt like you were like, okay, girl, well, let's talk about something else.
No, that was So anyway, tell me about Drag Race. No.
My favorite is, and I don't like.
First of all, like, I'm all about that conversation, of course, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a gay guy that, like, hosts as if it's, like, at, like, Sunday night football, whatever.
What's that?
However the heteros do it. But what is it? But, you know, I mean, that's what pre-COVID, and we're starting to get back into it, but like my boyfriend and I, we hold court at our apartment, and like just we cook and we pour the drinks and mm-hmm. we have, and it's so communal, but and like of course we're down to talk about that stuff, but that's not all that art it is, and that's of course, especially with reality TV, there is an art that goes into it, and it's of course there's an art that goes into Drag Race, and however it's portrayed on TV is how it's portrayed on TV, but I think like these conversations are really, really important to have with people that everyone thinks that they love and admire, but really there's there are mechanics in regards to how they navigate the world, which is, you know, why I'm really excited about talking with you, and also about like why I think what you've said so far is so relatable and eye-opening.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm obsessed with you. I'm obsessed with you. I think the episode's going to be called
Yeah.
which to bring it around to Drag Race, I think is a step in the right direction past meh.
You know what? That it also meh reverse spells hem, something that Silky could have worked on for that lip sync, but I was still eliminated, so
honey, I
tried that joke out for the first time, it didn't work, but okay, it's okay.
It was a workshop, okay. An out of town tryout, and we
cut
loved
it out.
It.
Cut it. Yeah. Edit this out. Patrick, edit this out. I'm just kidding.
In true multi-hyphenate form, though, I do edit these
episodes. Yeah, you're very serious about this.
I am very serious about
It's not just a title. It's a way of life. Hey.
It is a way of life. I'm writing a book on it, and it's, you know, this is, you know, 50 episodes of this podcast, and my book comes out in the spring of 2022. The deadline is this fall, and I'm you know, almost done writing that and about to turn in the deadline to Rutledge Publishing, and like It's a real thing, and I think in the 21st century of theater and drag and performance, like, there is – we're done waiting for people to give us opportunities. We have –
Your generation, I mean, I would say, I mean, I'm older than you, and I would say that your generation is forcing someone like me and everyone, like, this is something that we're being, I have to understand, even, actually, let me take that back. I think you're, what, 100% what you're saying is absolutely correct. We've had to define it for ourselves, and I think it's okay to say I want the world, and I think it's okay to say I can have the world, you know, like, I get to work for the, I can be a badass drag queen, I can go act, I can write a book. I can release music. I can also produce a television show and consult on a musical and do I can do all of that. And you told me that I really didn't have any value or worth. But look at what I can do, and it's not on your terms. That's being a multi-hyphenate is I think also claiming your own power. It's not just trying to prove it to everybody else. It's also trying to say, yeah, I can do this. And you thought I couldn't. And look at how powerful and confident and willing to make mistakes I am. Do you know how dangerous it is every single day to be a multi-hyphenate, right? Because at any given point, any one of your balls could drop. Sometimes mine do out of my tights. But at any point, your reaction.
You said, no, well, that was me trying to relate to you because I feel like I'm still going through puberty. So, like, you know,
it's your balls
like,
will drop. Your balls will drop. My balls will drop in a good way.
Yeah. In a good way.
But,
in
like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's dangerous to be a multi-hyphenate because you have to – you're juggling constantly. And not only are you juggling the jobs, but you're juggling relationships. And you're trying to make sure that everyone feels that you – for me, I always want to make sure everyone feels appreciated and respected and acknowledged. And that's important to me. That's important. That's an important part of how I conduct my business is that I value you. I value your input. I value our collaboration. I value your time. Being a multi-hyphenate is dangerous, and it's exciting and thrilling and fun. But there's a lot to it. There's a lot of responsibility to being a writer, an actor, a producer, a podcaster, a brother, a son. There's responsibility to those things.
No, this mentality is amazing, and you got far on your season, and I'm just wondering.
Drag Race.
Of RuPaul's Drag Race.
RuPaul's Drag Race.
Which whenever it comes on for some reason, I just want to go, RuPaul's Clam Bake. I don't know why, but it makes me laugh.
She's not cooking.
It just makes me laugh every time. It's like my own thing that just makes me giggle. It's like that I have just – it's my own little secret.
RuPaul's Clam Bake, you're not invited.
It's just her.
I'm like hanging out on the beach at the opposite end. I'm like, I got the Clam Bake.
Hey, girl. Do you think that the mentality, that really strong mentality of like multi-hyphenating is dangerous – contributed to your lengthy stay at Hotel Drag Race, like
she's queen to me.
She's amazing.
She's incredible. You know, I think when I say dangerous, I mean it is. You are. It is for us as a multi-hyphenate, I think we're living kind of boldly and loudly, and we're putting a lot on the line, right? It's like, I'm going to do all these things. That's what I mean by dangerous. It's like, you're in a world that's full of judgment, you're allowing people in a lot of different ways to be like, I can't wait to see how this turns out. You know,
100%.
At least that's how it feels to me. Yeah. And so I do think my ability, because you've got to remember, Michael, I had... You don't have to remember. This is just – I don't even know why I said it. You got to remember. This is RuPaul's Clam Bake. For me, my story was 18 years of my own career that I ran and that I was in charge of before I ever went to Drag Race. And so that, to me, was something – being able to cut my teeth in a local community and make mistakes and try new things and have tremendous success and have a lot of failure really prepared me for Drag Race 100%. I was really in my own feelings and in my own head because I just burped. I apologize.
I've done it like three times. It's fine.
I
love ASMR. It's great.
And so then I was at RuPaul's Clam Bake. I'm not gonna stop saying Clam Bake.
I know Clam Bake.
Okay, where was I? Clam Bake. Potatoes. Let's call the whole thing off.
Yay!
Nay! Okay. But Drag Race, I think, was... I had never filmed a reality television show.
Yeah.
So I had no idea how I would react in that environment. And I mentally was... It was all compounding upon itself. So I was prepared as much as I could be by having my hands in a lot of different things and trying a lot of different things and being a master of many and also nothing, right? I mean, kind of a master of none is kind of interestingly, right? So in some ways I was very mentally prepared, but I was not mentally prepared for the cameras, for the rigorous film day, for the inability to have communication to the outside world. I just wasn't prepared for that. And I'm a supremely social person. And so when my social ability is relying upon people that I'm competing against, and then we really can only talk when the cameras are on, it's like, this is kind of a very different experience than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. But it,
of course,
was great. I'm really grateful I did it. It changed my whole life. I mean, you know, I'm able to, talk to you today about some cool things because of Drag Race, you know. I'm not naive to that, and every ounce of my time on the show and like my heart and like being vulnerable really has opened me up to a world that was willing to embrace me in a variety of different ways. Also, I mean, the fandom is also full of judgment and is very harsh, and you have to be prepared for that as well, and I wasn't, you know. And I'm a 42-year-old gay man who was not like who's just doesn't understand how to necessarily appease or appeal to a 14-year-old fan base that is really just saying things that they probably don't understand what they're saying or don't know how to, you know. So I can't really, it doesn't really affect me in any certain distinctive way, but I wasn't prepared for it initially.
I feel like that's, you know, that's a real thing. I did I was on True Life. I go to performing arts sleepaway camp when I went to Frenchwoods, and I wasn't one of the people that were followed around, but mm-hmm. I definitely was featured in it. And I feel like if social media had been a part of that experience, my life would have looked differently at that time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I would have been better for it, or I don't know if I would have been worse for it, but it's really quite interesting to think about that. And social media plays a huge aspect in mental health. And
I want to say that too. Like, I mean, like for me personally, when I came home from, Drag Race on July 3rd of 2018 was when our season filmed. And I was in a therapy session on July 6th, and I started going back to therapy, and I really believe in mental health. I believe in the power of therapy. I believe in having conversations with people who are there to support you and not judge you and mm-hmm. help you work through things.
Hi, Jeanette, if you're listening.
Yes. Hi, Jeanette.
She's my girl. I love her.
I think it changed. I think my experience pre-announcement and post-viewing. Post-filming, I was a wreck. I had a choice to make, and I was like, I don't know how the world's gonna view me, because I don't know how they're gonna put it together, so I don't know how the world's gonna view me. Did I just mess up my entire career? Am I gonna have a career to come back to, even in Columbus? Like, how is this all gonna look? Just because you get in your own head and you start thinking about everything, you start dissecting every single moment and every glance and every like exhale. You're like, what was happening in my mind in any given moment? You're replaying it all, but you have no idea what really happens because you're just. You're trying to be present. You can't be. So therapy prepared me for my post-Drag Race filming life and allowed me to have a perspective. Also, as a multi-hyphenate, since that's really kind of where we're basing all of this in, I think it's really important for people to have perspective and like, what can I do? What is out of my hands? And what is too much? For me as a multi-hyphenate, I like to say yes to everything.
Me too.
And I had to learn how to say no. And that is like, I feel like it's a sign of failure. If I tell somebody, no, I can't do that, or no, I'm too busy, or no, saying that their ask or their isn't valuable or it's not worthy of my time. I don't want anyone to think that. Like, you know, so like I have a problem saying no, and I learned that. And through my therapy, I've learned how to be able to like politely and powerfully say that no. That's powerful.
That's beautiful. And I think also we understand, like, if we don't have the boundary, because it's multi-hyphenates, you need to have boundaries.
Yeah.
But if we have an issue of saying no, the investment of someone's fees to have them represent you, like a press rep or somewhere an assistant, so that they can field things for you and they could say no on your behalf, is therapy all on its own.
Sure is.
And a useful tool.
It really is. I mean, if you can't say no, find someone who can say no for you. Building your friend network or your chosen family network is also reminding yourself that you have to be surrounded by support, and in turn, be a pillar of support for somebody else. I mean, there's again, when you say those hyphenates, what does that look like? And that is work. It doesn't necessarily. Someone's probably shaking their head when someone says, "Well, friendship shouldn't be work," but it is. It requires you to be present, and that's not work, but you have to be present. You have to be willing to, and that's for every aspect of your hyphenate, right? Like, why take something on? Like, why say I'm going to be a podcaster if you're not going to be able to deliver and not be able to, or write a book and you miss all your deadlines? I mean, you're really not really writing a book then. You're going through the motions of saying, I'm writing a book. And we'll get to it when being a multi-hyphenate is really keeping it all moving. And no one does it by themselves. You know, like, that's the other part of this. No one does it alone. You know, and so I'm grateful for my support network that's like, you're capable, you are awesome, you are great, you're gonna succeed at this. Like, we all need cheerleaders, and I don't care what anyone, like, I need my cheerleaders, I need my support network to be the multi-hyphenate that I am, you know, like, I gotta have it, it all makes it work, it all makes it be cohesive and roll together.
Well said, Bubula.
Oh my god, thank you, baby.
So Tracy,
hi Jeanette.
So, Tracy, I have a little something to add, if you don't mind.
You're the cutest. This is the best ever.
I'm glad that means you're off book, which means that I'm glad that you're paying attention.
It means I've listened to that soundtrack recording for over my lifetime of the last 20 years a lot.
Of course, we all have.
Tracy, I have a little something I'd like to add, if you don't mind.
Yes. Oh my God, you are about to grace the presence of so many people around the country, and because you're gonna be doing Hairspray the musical, and you're gonna be playing Edna.
Can you believe it?
Are you so excited? I mean, I can believe it. That's the thing. Like, are you so excited,
Michael? Michael.
So no,
Michael.
Yes.
Yeah. Clambake. Yeah. That's my excitement. Clambake.
I know. That's the title.
I'm telling you, I am over the moon, terrified, excited, nervous. It's just like it's a dream come true. And I am grateful to be able to kind of really have a bucket list moment of my life, kind of be, I didn't think this would ever happen. I didn't think this would happen. Never in a million years did I think this part would happen.
Really? You're like, I lied. I did.
No,
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, this is a build up for, you're right. I knew this would happen, and I'm the perfect, because I'd heard rumblings and rumors of something for the 20th anniversary of Hairspray, which is coming in 2022. And I was like, God, I'd really love to be considered. And this was in 20, this is the end of 2019, beginning of 2020. And I kind of let it go. And then my phone rang. I was in Indianapolis on tour in support of my drag race run. And so this was July of 2019. And I picked up my phone, and it was Jerry Mitchell, who is the original choreographer for Hairspray and the choreographer for this tour, and Tony Award winner, Jerry Mitchell. And I don't know if you're aware of who Jerry Mitchell is, Tony Award winning Jerry Mitchell.
Jerry Mitchell. Jerry Mitchell.
And he said, he called me, and he goes, "Nina West, it's Jerry Mitchell. I had a dream about you." And I said,
"Bum bum bum bum."
And I said, "Mama, mama, me, mama." Full circle. I was like, I said hi. I couldn't figure out how to talk to Jerry Mitchell because I'm a big fan of Jerry Mitchell, and I was like, "Yes, you dreamt about me." And he's like, "You have to play Edna. You have to play Edna Turnblad." And I started shaking. And carried on the conversation for a couple minutes, and he said, "I'll be in touch." And we hung up, and I started to cry. Mm. And I called my best friend, and I was like, I think I'm going to get to do Edna. And then I didn't hear anything for quite some time. I didn't hear anything. And I was like, "I'm not going to bother Jerry Mitchell. Jerry Mitchell's very busy. How do I make sure that I can audition for this? How do I make sure that I'm not forgotten?" And so then Jerry called me again and said, "Hey, we want you to come to New York, and we wanted to just see you for this role. We want you to read and sing, and we just want to make sure everything's right. You know, was my dream correct?" And so I came to New York in March of 2020, right before the shutdown, and did all the stuff, and left the audition room, and I was like, "I nailed it." And you've had moments where I've nailed it many times, and nothing ever happens, or so I thought, and I was probably terrible, but I really did nail this audition. And I was walking down the street, down 42nd Street. It's like a dream. I was walking down 42nd Street because we were at the 42nd Street stage, that's rehearsal studios, 42nd Street studios, and I was walking away from the studios. Those there. You know where I was at. I was at those studios. That's where I was at. Even Jerry Mitchell, Jack O'Brien, Jerry Mitchell. Jerry Mitchell, mom. And I was walking down the street, and I had cut up 7th, and I was going to walk up to my hotel, and pretty instantly I got a phone call from my agent who said, you've booked Hairspray. And I couldn't believe it. And then COVID happened, and I was like, "Well, I don't know if we're ever going to get to do this." And thankfully, we are. And I get to go out on the road, and I get to watch people have a really incredible reaction to the show. So I'm really excited. Sorry, I'm really long-winded.
No, I'm obsessed with you. And America, whoever's listening, she's heading west out to your...
That's my last name in drag, baby.
I know. That's why I said it, because,
She's heading east.
She's heading east. She's heading north. And south,
but never west. Always west. But
always west. Don't forget west. You, Andrew, are amazing and the best. And I don't want to wrap up, but we do. And I have to thank Patrick for engineering this episode. And as always, Alan, Britt, Katie, Dory, and Yo, you're all amazing at Broadway Podcast Network. I'm so excited to catch you do the Hairspray National Tour.
And, thank you.
Everyone, where can we find you on social media?
Oh my gosh, you can find me all over social media at Nina West on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. My website is ninawest.com. And you can find out all about Hairspray at hairspraytour.com and follow it on social media at Hairspray on Tour. Michael, I am really grateful to be a multi-hyphenate, but more grateful to spend just a little bit of time with you. Thanks for allowing me to be here with you, and thanks for sharing your art and your love and your passion. Your joy is absolutely contagious, and I'm grateful for this time together, so thanks.
Thank you, my new friend. Everyone, thank you for listening. Subscribe, like, comment. That smile you have. For those of you listening, there's a big... adorable smile on Andrew's face. And now there's one of mine too.
Have a great day, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.